Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 199 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Marcel Van Helton, president of Red Lion Controls. Marcel is a passionate executive with more than 25 years leading strategy, planning, and execution of technology businesses across industrial software, edge computing, Internet of Things, embedded technology, automation, and digital healthcare. He has built and managed successful global commercial, marketing, and technology teams for GE, Kontron, and B&K Vibro across Europe and China. Marcel, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Good morning, Ken. Really glad to be on your show. Happy New Year. It's still allowed at the 9th of January, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Actually, this is, I believe, the second one we're recording in the new year. So happy New Year to you as well. And I've been told it's okay to say it all the way up to the end of the month because you have to capture, of course, Lunar New Year, which happens in about 3 weeks. So
another supply chain disruption.
Oh, there you go, baby. Yeah. So look, you've come highly recommended for this podcast by our own Luke Small, who joined us recently as a strategy partner. And I understand both of you guys worked at GE together as well. So I'm sure there'll be some interesting stories along the way. You know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast, and we really look at it as one's individual or professional digital thread that's led them to the current position. So what would you consider to be your digital thread?
I think it's really the digitization of the manufacturing space, what we now call the IT-OT convergence. I mean, I started out about 30 years ago selling SCADA and HMI systems in the early days. And really, at that time, we already combined manufacturing industrial data coming from PLCs into your HMI with ERP-based data in order to really optimize the output from the plant. So at GE, we actually, it was funny, we started a business segment in Europe called Factory IT, which was probably about 20 years ago, was really about deploying software to run manufacturing plants more efficient. And my main digital thread is really how we can use information combined with great technology to improve outcomes for our customers. It's focus on what outcome can you provide using technology and information and bring that together. And if you call that IT-OT convergence or whatever name we give on it right now, I think that is my digital thread using that.
You know, it's interesting. I think you and I share a very similar one. I was lucky enough to be part of a company called Wonderware way, way back in the day before it was public, and very much about that intersection of IT and OT. So I've always had a natural love for the convergence of those two. And GE certainly did it well, including this idea of really kind of outcome-based, if you will, both selling and solution providing. So you were 15 years plus, actually, with GE's industrial business in Europe, including at one point managing director for Germany. What were some of the notable learnings relative to industrial controls during that time?
Yeah, so it was a really interesting journey. I mean, we were basically a US supplier, I would say almost mid-tier, below the big ones, you know, Siemens and Rockwell, of course. A couple of things I learned. I think the industry is conservative, and I think that is still the fact. I remember at the time when I started, my boss at that time told me every machine will have a telephone number. And I think now we're actually at a place where every new machine might have an IP address. We already at that time a lot of technology available, maybe not as fast as we have now. We couldn't probably handle the data capacity we have now, but we had a lot of technology available. What you see is the industry is very conservative to adapt new technology, also because of the life cycle of the assets, the financial life cycle of the assets, correct? It's very difficult or very costly to upgrade control systems while the asset is still operating to the full satisfaction of the customer. So that is one thing. I think it's a very conservative industry, and we still see that. The other thing is really domain expertise is important, and understanding the industry and the customers is really key to success. You need to understand what parts of your equipment are crucial to the operation and what parts you can try new technology on. I give you an example. We were once doing a system for a big bottling lines at a big brewery, and we were collecting all the manufacturing data in order to run all the efficiency reports. And we were using a commercial data off-the-shelf database, one of the larger suppliers using the ODBC interface. And basically, the system stopped every week. And when we found out what it was a memory leak into the ODBC interface. And when we went back to the supplier of that ODBC interface, it was really saying, you know what, why don't you restart a thing every day, correct? If you're in an office environment, that you could do. And that is really trying to understand how this thing is used. And it's the same thing. If you look at safety critical applications, you know, it is safety critical. So I think understanding that and how things work is actually, it's a lot different than creating just an app on an iPhone over the weekend, correct? It is, some pieces are actually, you can do it that way, but some pieces are so critical that you need to be very solid in how you develop technology. And then the other interesting thing, so I've been a little bit away from industrial automation at its core, I'm back now in Red Lion, but the interesting thing, the fundamentals of industrial automation really didn't change. You know, we have new field buses. Of course, Profinet is there, although that started when I was there, EasyCAD. We have probably more standards than 30 years ago, like S95 and the S88 for batch. But if you still look at the support of ladder logic in IEC 1131, that's pretty old-fashioned, yeah. So really, a lot of the fundamentals of industrial automation, although we improved a lot on the data information side, the fundamentals on the plant floor are still intact. So that's an interesting thing to see. And that's probably have to do because at the end of the day, what we need to do is still need to fill a bottle or doing an aerator in a water treatment plant or those things. So that's what I actually have seen over the 15 years of GE going away from the industrial automation and actually coming back right now.
I know you went on to play leading roles at Contron, Abaco Systems, and finally B&K Vibro, all industrial system leaders in Europe. How did this time prepare you for your role at Red Lion, which we'll actually just talk about in a moment?
Yeah, so these are all technology companies, yeah? And what is exciting to work with a team, including the customer, which is always very important, which have ideas on what they want to do and design something great, which delivers customer value, yeah? And that's what we've been trying to do. So, for example, at Contron, we're working with the medical industry to help customers to run their image processing in the cloud. So that was an interesting thing in order to enable remote hospitals still have that capability that you could do image processing coming from an MRI in the cloud while they don't have that expensive equipment in the hospital there. You know, at Abaco, we were really looking at how to use artificial intelligence to help to save life on the battlefield. And that was a really interesting high-tech environment where money was not really an objection and we could use the best technology available. And then really BK Vibro, we really were looking how we could make the field of vibration monitoring simple and easier to deploy. So vibration monitoring was really a field or is a field of specialists, you know, people not in lab coats, but certified people kept 1 to 4. And we were really trying to make that a lot easier by applying AI. And so it really helped me to think through on how to set roadmaps and strategy to grow a company. What are the interesting pieces of a business where you actually can grow because you can deliver better customer outcomes by using technology? And that's basically that piece I still use every day. And if you look at what we try to do at Red Lion, is our vision is to empower our customer to unlock the value of the industrial data, building a better world together. And building a better world together really means together with our customers. And Red Lion started about 50 years ago in York, Pennsylvania. Being in the industrial automation space, bought a couple of companies. They bought SixNet, they bought Antron, and recently we bought MB ConnectLine, a remote access security company in Germany. And really, if you start looking at the company from a distance, and that's one of the things I try to do, is what are we actually doing? What do we have in common in all those little pieces what we are doing? And it is actually about connecting a customer to the industrial data. You know, either through remote access, through our Flex Edge IoT products, or the new recently acquired MB Connect line, or connecting assets through a network using our Ethernet network products in our Entron product range, or through an operator interface on the machine. So it's really, how do we connect a customer to their industrial data? And that's what we are focused on. And that is probably what I've done in those other companies, looking at how we can help technology to create value for the customer by looking at the bigger picture. That helped me to prepare for the role at Reliant.
You know, one thing interesting is that you introduce those companies all as really kind of technology companies, which usually you think of as pieces and parts, if you will, from the technology solution stack. Yet it felt like in every description you made of your time with them, you saw them much more in a solution or, to your point, outcome-based, right? So it's interesting. You always enter on the technology side, you exit or finish out on the solution side. And I can see all of that playing directly into even how you're approaching Reliant in terms of kind of connecting customers to their industrial data. I like the fact in your LinkedIn profile that you're using the byline right now, building the T-H-E capital industrial data company. So just for clarity, what do you consider to be industrial data, and where do you see the opportunity around it for Reliant?
So industrial data, the way I look at it, is data which is generated by industrial assets. A lot is time series, correct? So there are transactional as well, but majority is time series data. And we've been working on time series data for a long, long time. What is interesting right now, and I think I mentioned to somebody else the other day, I think industrial automation is cool again, and is that companies invest billions in software to optimize their operation, yeah? And when we talked about the cloud guy, AWS, Azure-based applications, you see a lot of development, a lot of investment in that space. And the interesting thing is that the biggest challenge remains access to the right data. And that is something we're trying to solve. So in order to create value out of those systems, you need to have the access to the right data. And that is not just the PLC you can connect. It could be a blower, which is a standalone system somewhere, which actually has impact on the product quality, because if the blower fails, the temperature goes too high in the room and the process changes, correct? So unless you have that blower data, maybe just if it is running or not running as a part of your data analytics, you cannot do the right analytics, or you might come to a wrong conclusion. So that's why it is so important that we provide companies who create solutions using all that information the right data. And what is interesting as well is that a lot of people working in that space right now are actually have not really the expertise, what we talked earlier about the plant floor. They are expecting to work with a information point, which is in context. And they actually don't understand that that might be an old 4 to 20 milliamp sensor somewhere, correct? Or PD100 sitting somewhere. So bridging that gap and make sure that the people who do really cool things using AI and all sort of other technologies, you know, building great solutions, make sure that they having the right data and can get to all the information from the plant floor. That is what we're saying. You know, empower our customers by unlocking the value of industrial data. That's how we see industrial data.
Yeah. Seems like you're taking on a very important role at a very important time for Reliant Controls, and of course, as president for their business. I'm curious, what do you consider to be state of the art in industrial data management? Who do you see as some of the best practitioners of it?
I think every company generates already a lot of data. And I think a couple of years ago, so actually a long time ago, I think the automotive was pretty much in sort of the leading edge, correct? By just in time, integrating supply chain into the manufacturing plant, in the manufacturing operations, using data, all that sort of things. Not sure how far they develop now. One of the newer industries, which I think is where I see a lot of best practices is actually in the wind turbine industry. So wind turbines are pretty expensive assets. They are critical that they run 24/7. A lot of variables in there. So what you're seeing is that the wind turbine operators or the owners really have a lot of advanced software technology in order to do predictive maintenance. Because especially if you look at offshore, it's so important that you actually have 12 months lead time to a failure because you need to organize a ship to actually go there. You want to combine things, correct? But also, they have connections straight away with the energy cost, energy trading. They need to look at the energy forecasting, a lot of weather data involved in that. So really, I think if you look at that particular industry, remote assets, hard to reach, not always great, fiber optic connections to it, centralized data, a lot of interaction with different systems. I was very impressed with what they are doing. And I think that they are probably on the top of what is possible today. I would see that as probably as a best practice there. Yeah. It's really interesting to see what those guys are doing. Yeah.
Yeah, fully agreed. I know GE obviously had a play in that at the time. One of your peer companies, Vestas, at the time, one of our earliest M&A assignments was to help them find an industrial analytics company to acquire. And we ended up steering them and helping them acquire Utopus Insights back in 2018, which had just literally spun out from IBM as the Smarter Energy team. Yeah. So it was a great deal. They got patents, they got PhDs, they got obviously a running business with already a pretty good set of exposure out in the industry. But I agree with you, all of those cases you just talked about and those capabilities came with that and was absolutely critical, especially for a large OEM who wanted to provide the same capabilities to other OEMs' equipment, right? And that was the key.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they want to integrate third-party wind farms and that. And I forgot to tell the other great thing that they're actually doing with the data, they go back to the designs, correct? So they're looking at the data, the real-time data, high-frequency data, and start looking how they actually can optimize the design of the wind turbine as well. So it's a complete closed loop. Oh, and that is, I think, what they're doing is an example for every OEM. And they do it with high-frequency data. And so, yeah, it is really interesting to see.
Yeah, fully agreed. So one of the spiffs that anybody who refers a podcast speaker in, at least a Momenta, gets is that they get to also suggest a question. And Luke Small suggested this one. He said, so look, to be successful in industrial data means considering the cloud and perhaps cloud vendors such as Azure and AWS. How do you see this playing against the traditional Purdue model or industrial automation stack as we think about it, specifically around industrial data?
Yeah, so I think Luke actually knows my opinion about that. Yes, I'm not a big fan of those models. To be honest with you, I draw a picture, it's probably 25 years ago, where we already said, you know, we need to be user-centric, or maybe you should say data consumer-centric right now. And if you look at the typical model and the different layers, the interesting thing is what I always found is if you look at the typical automation pyramid, ERP is pretty small, correct? So the way we automation guys used to draw the world is, hey, we will design all the PLCs, all the IO, and then we will draw a little wall, a cloud, and say ERP, correct? And if you would look at the IT world, they will draw all those processes in the ERP world, and then a little line says plan four. And so the fact that we think that ERP on the top is smaller is a misunderstanding. And then what we're trying to say as well is one of the things is, you know what, on the plan four, we talk about milliseconds. On HMI, we talk about seconds. MES, we talk about maybe the minutes, longer minutes, an hour. In ERP, we talk about days. And so in time for data accuracy. And I think that's completely vanished. I think we need to provide everybody with the right data at the right timing when you need it. I give you an example. We currently have a customer. They take a high-speed signal through one of our FlexEdge controllers, cloud controllers. We call the Edge controller. And actually, it drives data into the cloud. There, where they're using all sorts of other data, what they combine, they determine real time in a real time algorithm, and they claim it's the best in the world to do that, a new set point for a drive. And basically, they're sending it out the set point and adjusting the drive to get a product flow. They say with this algorithm, they are absolutely the best in the world, the most efficient in the world, how they operate that asset. And it's only possible by providing real-time high-speed information into a cloud and get it back in real time. So latency, for example, is a very key issue in this whole thing. In a typical Purdue model where you have to go through different layers or through the automation pyramid, that will not be possible because you will be in the layer where you talk about days, correct? So I think that is what we need to do. And our goal is really to see that we can make industrial data available everywhere and on a secure way. That's a new thing what comes in. Of course, security is a much bigger topic right now than it was a couple of years pre-Stuxnet, I would say. And that is what it is. So I think the model is flattened. I think you need to look at multi-time industrial data bus and with different consumers, and you want to put the consumer, you know, which either could be an operator, or could be an analyst, could be a piece of software in the middle, and you need to make sure that it has access to the right data at the right time when they need it and in a secure way. I think that's the way it looks. So I think the model itself, in that respect, is not doing justice on the way the world works today. How do you want the world to work today?
You know, I always drew an analogy between the industrial automation pyramid and Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which also has a framework of a pyramid. And the idea, of course, being the basics that we need to be safe and secure at the lower levels and self-actualization at the peak. And in some sense, think about it as an outcome framework, right? I do basic sensing and reading at the bottom. I'm actually developing very deep insights, hopefully, at the top of it. And the unfortunate part of any pyramid is the size somehow should represent the the importance, and it doesn't necessarily, right, in that regard. So
exactly, yeah. And then it's so how it goes back, correct? So it's actually, I think it's a lot more closed loop, and it's just not up and down. It is a lot more almost chaotic how data moves between things right now. And yeah, some pieces of data will go, depending on the application, classical sensor, PLC, HMI, or classical DCS, you know, and then going to historical database, whatever process database, and then into the ERP or put an MES in the middle. Mm-hmm. But there is also data which is goes straight from a sensor into a application running in the cloud. And so it is a lot more chaotic at the moment. I'm not sure chaotic is the right word, but it's there are so many possibilities right now where you cannot just streamline it in layers anymore.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's certainly apropos. What I appreciate your background is you have depth in Europe, but having worked at U.S. companies and, of course, now once again in the leadership role at a U.S. company. So there have been some very bullish forecasts on manufacturing in the U.S. and Europe, aligned, of course, with the respective CHIPS Acts and resilience reshoring efforts. How are you thinking about these markets and your business opportunities in each in 2023?
So we all know that some people will say the markets will slow down, correct? In towards, depending on which analyst you listen to, towards the end of 2023 or early 2023. Unfortunately, we already have seen a lot of tech companies who took action because they overhired during the pandemic and adjusting that. I'm pretty bullish about the American market. As you state, the whole reshoring, people want to get back the supply chain back into the US. We are actually looking at that as well. The whole chip supply chain crisis, including shutdown in harbors in China because of COVID, put a lot of stress on that. So we see a lot of improvement, but so I'm continues to be very bullish on the US market. OPEX spend will go down a little bit, and people are a little bit more careful with maintenance costs, maintenance spending. But I think CapEx costs, if you see what they're going to invest in, electrical vehicles, I think still the energy sector is going to be strong. I'm pretty bullish about it. Europe, I'm less confident. I'm more concerned about Europe. Of course, we have this terrible war continue to go on. That's one piece. For us as an American supplier who builds majority in the US, we of course have the exchange rate is at the moment against us. We have a strong dollar rate. So we have to see how China picks up again. We know that traditionally, especially the German market was very strong export focus on China. Let's see how that's going to pick up. Maybe the German OEM market has an uplift because the US is now looking for high-tech quality machines. So that could be an uptick for the German market. So very bullish on America. A little bit more, I call it, concerned, I would say, about Europe because of both exchange rate and I think a little bit of a slowing economy.
Look, you've already mentioned some of the potential challenges, including exchange rates, supply chain difficulties, et cetera, facing U.S. and European manufacturing business. I'm curious, how are you preparing Red Lion to help your clients address these issues?
So one of the interesting things, if you talk about the U.S. market, is labor shortage. Yeah, and I would never, ever expect that I will be in a position that I have to compete for labor against manufacturing plants so that I actually would know what a person at the Starbucks roasting plant close to our plant would make or the person at Harley-Davidson, which we have in York, Pennsylvania as well. And the fact is, I know. So there is a whole competition for labor in the market. So I think there's still a competition for tech talent. I think that is one of the concerns I have, how to, and but also the labor market. And I believe that the U.S. only can get the productivity they need because of the reshoring is if they automate. Because automation, and you have seen that in Germany, the efficiency of the German plants and the highly automated status of those plants allowed Germany, with a high-wage country, to actually compete against low-wage countries. U.S. need to get into the same stage. So I think with our technology, there is a lot of older assets in the U.S., which we still need to connect. We need to get that data in order to drive those software platforms, which can help to optimize the manufacturing plant. And I think that's where we can help the American manufacturing base, correct? To help really to automate things that we can drive through the use of industrial data, can drive things centralized, so we can reduce in, for example, people needed for inspection of oil pipelines, or that we actually can automate, help to automate plants more so we can use the people for higher level of labor. And that is a way to really avoid the labor crisis in the U.S. And I think that's how we can help people.
Yeah. No, I would fully agree there. Our listeners will know I'm a big fan of Andrew Obin over at B of A, who covers all of the pretty much the industrial publicly held companies in the U.S. And he came out with his end of year report, and he basically has a forecast for the industrial automation sector of double digit CAGR growth through the next 5 years. And for software, more specifically, 15%. And yeah. I tell you, I'm a firm believer. I am very bullish on both. And I think the time is right. As you very well said earlier, industrial automation is cool again, right?
I agree. Automation is cool again. Yeah.
Very much so. So look, in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
Yeah, I read a lot about people who did insanely great things in technology. I'm a technology geek and combine that with business. Yeah. Recently, actually, I read an interesting story, Amp It Up, of a Dutch guy, Frank Slootman, who's he runs Snowflake right now. And before that, he runs ServiceNow, which really took that whole service industry and data domain, which is now owned by Dell. Also, recently, it was interesting reading No Rules from Reed Hastings, how he runs Netflix, about talent density and how he deal with how to improve talent density and how to get the best out of technical people. It's really interesting. And then the other thing is really when I'm running, I try to run a cycle to try to stay a little bit healthy. And then, but also reading the books about who get into those sports and really how they prepared for some crazy things like a 100-mile ultra and how to deal with that, or people like Scott Jurek, which is a famous ultra runner. So that really how people get the best out of themselves. And that's what I'm interested in. I'm really interested. How do you get the best out of a group of people, if it is technology or anything else, and work together as a team to deliver great outcomes? And I think that's fun, reading about how other people are doing that and learning and picking up some things along the way. That's how I got my inspiration. Yeah. And always, you got always new ideas in reading those things.
I especially appreciate the runner aspect. As a former marathoner myself, I know the discipline it takes to be able to run even a marathon. I say even because when you talk about ultras, obviously there's much, much more to it, or triathlons as an example. And so, but what a lot of people don't appreciate is it's really a good time to listen to books on tape. So as we used to call it, right? Audibles now.
Yeah.
So yeah, great stuff. So Marcel, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
You're welcome. Really enjoyed it. Hopefully your listeners will enjoy it as well.
I think so. And I appreciate, again, Luke, for putting us together. So this has been Marcel Van Hilton, president of Red Lion Controls, and I'll say consummate tech geek and runner, because that probably puts the bookends around who you are in the middle. And somewhere in the middle, it says outcomes. So thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. Thank you and have a great day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.